Welcome to episode 12 of Virtually Relevant, Houston VR's podcast about all things AR and VR. I'm Eric.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm William.
So we're just going to kind of do a news roundup as we all hang out around our houses involuntarily, but safely. So it's either a wonderful time for VR or a terrible time for VR, letting us escape, but there's a lot of challenges too. Definitely. Actually, probably the biggest one is if you don't already own a VR headset, you're probably not getting one right now. No matter what China is saying, their production capacity is not ramping back up right now. So getting a hold of, say, a Rift S or an Index is extremely challenging. At this point, Oculus is actually resorting to selling refurbished original Rifts, the CV1s, for $300, which is kind of a screaming deal. It's still a great headset, and there are ways in which it's better than the Rift S. So if you don't have one, that's not a bad way to go. The only real downside is having to set up the external sensors. So
are they selling it just the headset for $300, or are they selling headset plus controllers for $300?
That's my understanding. It's the full kit, but I may be wrong on that.
I mean, that's a pretty good deal, honestly. If you're getting the Rift, the Rift plus Touch, and I think it's three sensors that you need out of the box, right?
You need two. You can tack on a three to get more proper room scale. I think they're just bundling the two. That's traditional. Okay. There is a little bit of Rift S and Quest inventory leaking into the market, and people said if you're watching the Best Buy website, you know, every day there'll be a couple of minutes where they're available and you have to jump very fast. There's actually a trick to beating the bots and getting them. If you look on Reddit, there's a how-to. It's a little complicated, and you have to be patient, but it is doable, and at least three people say that they've successfully landed them that way. So it's not impossible.
So double checking, I mean, looking up the Best Buy page for refurbished Rifts, it's showing Rift plus Touch and two sensors.
So right.
It's the starter kit post-touch.
Post-touch.
Launch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For $300, which is still a pretty good deal.
It is. It's not bad. I mean, and this is especially kind of handy for people who have very wide or very narrow IPDs where the software-only adjustment of the Rift S isn't as ideal.
Right.
This is kind of nice that you can get one. They are refurb, but you're getting a full factory warranty from Oculus and so forth. So
yeah, which is nice, and hopefully that means that they've looked it over and made sure that, you know, if you have any of the common Rift Gen 1 CV, you know, CV1 Gen 1 Rift problems, they've kind of looked out for that, or hopefully gone ahead and just preemptively replaced some of those things.
Yeah, hopefully. There was a ribbon connector between the left and right headphone that ran around the back that was particularly prone to breakage, so people would lose sound in one ear. I would sincerely hope that if they're refurbing it, that they're
just going ahead and replacing.
Yeah,
that.
Just going ahead and replacing that, because that would be the
save them the time rather than, you know, dealing with it in the future.
So, it's I think it's, you know, we don't really know what the situation in China is, but if anyone's in a position to read the tea leaves better than the average citizen, it's probably people who have ties to the supply chain, and I think the fact that they're ramping up and advertising, you know, refurbished CV1s suggests that they aren't expecting a flood of Rift S's to come back into the supply chain in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
It may be a little longer. So,
and speaking of advertising, I've kind of mentioned it to y'all, but I've found it very weird how, at least for me, when I've been on YouTube recently, I'd say for the past like almost month, I just get bombarded with advertisements for Oculus.
Interesting.
Really?
But the thing is, like, you know, they're not on the shelf.
Right.
But yeah, I found it very weird that yet I can't go like an hour, like if I'm watching YouTube and they've got advertisements, like especially for music, like if I have it
right,
just doing some music in the background.
Sure.
I will get a couple advertisements an hour. You know, if I'm just hearing
music. I can't
see
them stopping their marketing campaign just because, you know, they're having trouble getting them out
there. They may be locked in. It may be one of those things where they pre-bought a certain number of months and they can't really not run them.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. But at the same time, I would think it'd probably be good for them to go to YouTube and say, hey, can we like
defer
this? Just delay it, like show less now and then just keep it going, you know, longer on.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean that's possible, but it also doesn't hurt them to have something sold out. Like the Nintendo Switch was sold out everywhere for months and months and months and months on end, but it was still a hyper desirable console that people were trying to get their hands on. So it doesn't really hurt them too bad for something to be sold out because it guarantees that when it's in stock, people are going to buy it out immediately.
It's
kind of a 50-50 shot.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, yeah.
You do want it on people's minds, and I think the desire for VR headsets is spiking right now because as people are trapped indoors, they want to be able to feel like they're in a different place. There's a lot of interest in remote collaboration, remote education, and fitness uses. I mean, almost all of the very active apps are suddenly releasing fitness tracks and so on.
Yeah, Beat Saber just released a fitness app or a fitness track for their...
Right. So did O-Shape, yeah.
Right. I saw the people who make Within are actually going to be making a fitness based game.
It's a subscription model, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a subscription based fitness app, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It is very Beat Saber. I watched some of the footage and it is very, very much Beat Saber, just with a more meditative aesthetic. Like you're on a mountaintop hitting things that are flying at you instead of, you know, a Neo soundscape type situation.
Gotcha.
But yeah, no, I mean, yeah, fitness apps are big. Like, again, to call over to the Nintendo Switch, there's a game called Ring Fit Adventure that's like sold out everywhere and going for hundreds of dollars more than it originally retailed because everyone's at home. No one can go to the gym. Like, if you bought into, I was telling my wife, you know, if I'm so glad we didn't buy gym memberships anytime recently, because if we did, we would be screwed because you just can't go.
Yeah.
And
particularly because a lot of gym memberships require you to cancel in person and those are all closed.
Right.
So,
but as soon as this is over, it's going to be like New Year's Day 2.0. It's going to be, you know, people are going to be packing into gyms trying to get their quarantine body over with.
Right.
So,
good news is if you do already have a headset, there's sales and deals happening on software all over the place. Oculus is doing its great indoors sale. Viveport Infinity, which is, you know, one of these sort of all you can eat, kind of a Netflix for VR software service, which was always a pretty good deal if you had a desktop VR headset, is suddenly a screaming deal. They've got it down to $27 a year for, I think, the next week or so.
Wow.
Which
I might actually have to buy in on that.
Right.
Yeah,
depending upon the content, Viveport, when it first launched, they had that subscription model. It wasn't Infinity. It was something else. But it was like the monthly rolling catalog that they would like switch out, or you got to pick like three games a month and then swap them out, which is, I mean, that's a good model. Like I use Gamefly for my console games and that works fantastically. Like I don't want to spend $50 on a game I'm going to beat in a weekend. Like that's just not who I am as a consumer.
Right.
I feel really awful about that.
Yeah.
So like these subscription based options are really good, and if the content's there for Viveport Infinity, that's a fantastic deal. Like that's one game basically.
Right. I mean, that's $2 and change a month. As long as you're finding one game a month you're interested in, it's probably well worth it. It's not like the super top tier titles, but I mean they're very respectable things. I mean, you know, you're seeing, you know, Box VR, Angry Birds, Fisherman's Tale, Racket Fury, Knockout League, O-Shape.
I'd say if you get two games out of it that you like, you've paid for your yearly subscription.
Yeah, totally.
Because, like, I mean, $15 is pretty close to some of, like, the lower length games, like not the full-on AAA games, but some of the more indie games, $15, $20, that's around the price range. So if you get one to two of those that you find that you enjoy, you've made your subscription money, you know, well worth it.
And, I mean, it makes it make it a little more sense to graze, you know, pull down a few titles, give them 10 minutes. If you don't like them, you ditch them. So, exactly. I mean, even things that you're like, maybe, you can find out if maybe they kind of suit your taste.
Yeah, I might have to jump in on that because that's not too bad. And I looked at the Infinity service a while back, and they had Arizona Sunshine and a couple others. I was like, I've been waiting to pull the trigger on a couple of those, right. But that's a pretty good deal at $27 for the year.
I'd never pulled the trigger on it, despite the fact it was a good deal, just because I stay pretty busy. But at a touch over $2 a month, I'm willing to take the risk. I'm almost positive I'll play at least something every month at that price.
Right.
So
yeah, I'll probably be getting it after we end this podcast.
Damn, we need an affiliate code.
We do. We truly do. But kind of a niche thing here, but very cool for people who are really interested in kind of the physiology and psychology of playing with the boundaries of VR. There's a Steam app called OVR Advanced Settings, and it's mostly for doing things like setting super sampling on a per app basis, things like that. But they've just released a version of it that supports redirected walking, so that it will just slowly turn your visuals as you're moving to try to redirect you back to the center of your space. Trick is that you really do need a decent sized space for that to work well, which means probably, and this is, of course, desktop only since it's Steam VR, which means that really the only way you're going to make that work is if you have a backpack PC or a laptop that you can strap to your back and, go turn off Guardian boundaries and go nuts. But from what I've read in some of the studies, 6 meters by 6 meters is kind of a bare minimum to make it work. You're not going to get, unless you've got your own personal warehouse or something, you're not going to get into a situation where you can walk endlessly and feel like you're not constrained. But it probably will buy you a feeling of your space being larger than it is. So even if it's not good enough to give you a feeling of unlimited space, it might expand your virtual space. You can adjust how aggressively it centers you back. I read a review that was from someone who's using a 4 meter by 4 meter space, which is a decent size space, probably as big as most people can get in their house just by clearing out some furniture. And they said they had to crank it up to very aggressive for it to do much, and it was a little uncomfortable for them at that point. But
I guess it depends on how it's being done. Like we've talked about before on the podcast, what was it? Unseen Diplomacy.
Yeah.
Where they do very narrow, tight corridors that redirect you around a fairly small space. And it's fairly, it's pretty convincing.
Right.
Making a lot of very quick turns. So it's not like a big arc.
Well, really with Unseen.
It's still fairly convincing.
With Unseen Diplomacy, if I remember, and definitely with T for God, they're playing more with non-Euclidean spaces rather than redirected walking. So, they're just sort of, they're not turning your world, but they are folding space in ways that can't really be done. So it's a different technique to achieve the same purpose, to make more use out of a small space. But this is basically, as you're walking forward, you think you're walking in a straight line and it's slowly rotating the world. And since your brain uses visual cues to walk straight, it will actually be turning while you think you're walking straight. So they can kind of curve you back towards the center while you think you're walking straight.
Right.
Yeah. The name has slipped my tongue. Who's the people that did Ghostbusters and Star Wars?
The Void.
Yeah. Their metric for their system that they used, I think what I remember them saying was if you basically had a 30-foot diameter circle, you could walk around the outside of that circle and you would think that you'd just be walking in a straight line.
Right.
Yeah. First, if you build the experience knowing what the constraints are and so on, you can play games just like that, and which is exactly what they were showing in all those diagrams. If you have an arbitrary walking simulator, say like Dear Esther, where people could turn any direction at any time, you need a much larger space to compensate for that because...
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's some techniques that are on the horizon that require eye tracking. Basically, if you are blind during saccades are where your eye snaps rapidly from one location to another. And they figured out that you can actually rotate things a degree or two during a saccade and your brain doesn't notice. So it actually makes it so that you can more aggressively redirect without people realizing it. But that does, of course, require high quality eye tracking. So that's not in the mix for most people yet, but that may be in play later down the line. Either way, I mean, that's if you've got a laptop and you've got access to a bigger space like a gymnasium, that would actually be really cool to try. And I would very much I'm planning to try it as soon as we can escape the house. So I'm a little limited. I can drag furniture around, but that's about the closest I can get. So
yeah, I was thinking something similar with you know, like the Quest being able to launch, especially some of these older simulation or these older games like Dear Esther would probably run on the Quest.
Yeah, I would think nowadays, so. Think? I would hope so.
Or, I mean, it could be optimized for Quest. And that's something that you could take out to, like, a basketball court or something like that
and walk around. And I'll be honest, I am a sucker for walking simulators. I actually like just walking around and exploring. When I got the Virtuix Omni, it was very much with the hope that I'd be able to play a lot of those games and just walk for miles in VR. Didn't end up meeting my needs well enough to sacrifice the floor space and so on, especially as they locked down and headed more towards a location-based experience. But I still have high hopes that at some point we'll hit a point where I can just walk in VR while I'm still inside. So,
well, once we get there, we'll be able to just substitute ourselves for remote assistance robots, and so I won't have to go to work. I can just send in my little Segway bot and have it do the things, and I can just walk around like I'm there. But yeah,
I'm in. Deal with it. I'm totally in. No, my day job, NetEdge VR. We actually have a lot of people that remote in and have for years. And we even talked seriously about getting some of the little roving robots. What we ended up doing was setting up screens in each room and people could hop between them to pop to where they needed to be. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But it would be cooler. It would definitely be cooler. Of course, what we always threatened to do was, you know, hang a laptop around somebody's neck like a necklace and do it like Tweaky and Dr. Theopolis on Buck Rogers. But
yeah. There you go.
We never made good thinking, on that threat.
Yeah, just get you a find a department store that's going out of business, and you know, put an iPad on the face of the mannequin.
There you go. I like it.
And there you go. And just stick him on a little base that you can move around with, like a Raspberry Pi or something.
Perfect. Has anybody kicked the tires on the new environment that just popped up for the Oculus Quest?
I don't have a Quest.
Not yet.
You have not yet?
Still can't get one.
I know. It's just the thing. You're doomed. You can't get one right now.
I didn't pull the trigger early, so I'm out of luck.
Is that for update 15?
Yeah. I think you have to be on update 15, but they just did. If you go into your virtual environments and you're on the latest firmware, it should be available. It's a space station. It's extremely nice. Very, very pretty.
Okay, very cool.
And I've only spent a couple of minutes in it, and I turned off Guardian Boundary so I could kind of sneak around corners and peek into areas. There's a lot of stuff even kind of around corners and out of sight, which is a nice change of pace. Some of their environments, you know, you get around the corner and there's just nothing there. I'm seeing Easter eggs all over the place. I've already seen at least one Blade Runner Easter egg and at least one Alien Easter egg in there. So if people have it and check it out, drop us a line and let us know what you're finding. Because I get the sense that maybe there's a lot of space-related Easter eggs tucked here and there in the environment, which made me very, very happy.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out. I am using, it's kind of the dome-shaped environment right now. Beyond the default kind of very wood room. But that one came out a good while ago.
Yeah.
And then I still haven't tried messing around with doing your own custom.
Right.
Custom environment, which there was a little trick to, but yeah. I never got around to messing with it.
You can replace one of the existing environments. And, hey, this buys you an extra slot. So now I've been using the ski lodge up till now, which is very pretty. But I like this one enough. I may stick with it. It is it's a really good looking environment. So hopefully first of many. But I thought it was a nice touch that they just sort of dropped that without making much fuss about it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, I saw HoloLens. They announced that they're ramping up so that they can reach a larger, I guess, a larger group. They said that there's already tens of thousands out to hundreds of enterprise customers, which basically, I mean, there's no way for us to verify that in any real meaningful way. So I guess we take their word at it.
Sure.
No one can really get a hold of one that I know of. I mean, like, that was kind of the thing is with the HoloLens 1, you know, we knew several people here in the Houston area who have them.
Right.
Who, you know, were using them professionally, things like that. HoloLens 2 is kind of exclusive. We don't really know anybody personally who's got it. So it's kind of secretive.
Yeah. No, I mean, for a long time, it was only closely held partners. There were like lots of NDAs. So it wasn't until not too long ago, maybe a month or two back, when they started, in theory, being available to kind of the rank and file. It's definitely targeted at enterprise. And I don't think that's going to change. But it sounds like maybe it's going to be a little more available if you are looking for it. And we definitely know people who were looking for it.
I'm guessing it was just maybe kind of rumors that were going around of why they weren't really getting those out there. Had y'all heard anything about
one or two?
What did you hear? All I can kind of really remember was, I think maybe it was something about the display or maybe the little projector or the glass or something. They just couldn't produce it right, you know, and so it just wasn't working. But
I'd heard that there were some challenges getting enough displays that passed QA. The other thing I heard is that the early versions out in the field would shut down in high heat and high humidity situations, which wasn't really ideal for the platform they're targeting for the whole enhanced soldier. What do they call that? The
Advanced soldier?
Yeah,
or future soldier?
Right. I mean, a lot of that's going to be in high heat, high humidity situations, so that's not ideal. And even people that we were talking to in like oil and gas, they were expressing frustration because they'd take it out in the field and it would just shut down. So maybe they're still knocking the kinks out of it, but hopefully the fact that they're ramping up means that they've got their production issue sorted out and maybe some, you know, improvements on that front.
And hopefully means we'll see somebody here in the Houston area that we know personally.
Right.
Who has them. I mean, we know quite a bit of the, you know, the community here in the area, and they're usually pretty quick on the ball with those, you know, with that equipment because they're working in those enterprise industries. So, I was surprised to hear there wasn't any at, the Industrial VR Summit.
There were
earlier this year. There were.
There were two.
Okay.
But, like 80% of the booths that had them had HoloLens ones and were complaining they couldn't get twos.
I see.
But yeah, there was at least two on the floor that I know of. I did get to try it. The field of view was definitely improved, but still definitely not where
still
I would want
there.
It to be. It went from sort of ridiculously disappointing to merely, you know, mediocre. We were definitely spoiled by VR displays that cover most of your field of view. You still have this sort of very chopped off area in the middle that's this rendering. So it had some nice things. I don't know whether it was the stock HoloLens 2 or whether they were mods made by these particular people that had them fitted to hard hats, which, by the way, they're designed so that you can slot them into compatible hard hats. But they were actually using bone conduction mics so that people could hear the sound in noisy environments without compromising, you know, their ears. So you're not covering up your ears, you're not blocking outside sound, but you're still picking up information through the bone conduction mics. But I do not know if that was first party or aftermarket.
Well, I mean, I use a bone conductive headset most of the time now, and I'm very happy with the technology. It's come quite a ways from what it was. So,
no, I know a number of people that swear by them now. So
you were going to say, Kevin?
Yeah.
I was just going to say that's pretty interesting with the bone conduction, and I'm also wondering if you can hook up a throat microphone to them as well.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm thinking back, and I think they said it was aftermarket, but it was able to pair via Bluetooth.
And I don't remember if it was the HoloLens 2 or something else. I want to say it was the HoloLens 2, but I think they were using 3D printed connectors to connect them to hard hats.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Has anybody been looking at the new numbers out of Steam on VR headsets?
I saw this when it came out. And so it's interesting, the new method they're using.
Yeah.
So I'd seen that, you know, your headset has to have been connected and used in the past month, which I think is a fairly good metric for, you know, active VR numbers. I don't know how much, like, it's obviously not going to give us insight into, you know, how many VR headsets are out there and how many have been sold and how many are there. And it won't give us any insight into, you know, people who just buy the Rift S and then never install Steam, which seems very short-sighted, but I can absolutely see people who go to Best Buy, buy their stuff on, set their Rift S up and then just only ever use the Oculus Store and don't even think about the fact that they can download Steam and use that platform.
Right. I'm sure that's a subset of the population. I don't know what percentage. Unfortunately, without the first party manufacturers giving us real numbers, the best we can do is count the installs in the most popular apps, check Steam statistics, and so on. The old methodology was it checked to see if there was a headset connected at the time you submitted the survey, which was not ideal. If you look at the charts and so on, you get like this weird discontinuity when they changed methodologies, but it should be fine, you know, going forward, you know, month on month.
This also doesn't cover quests, which obviously it can't.
It does actually now.
Technically, it does include quests in their numbers, but it doesn't cover quest only users.
Correct.
Is what I'm
getting. It's only going to cover quest users using Oculus Link,
the Link
in Steam, which is pretty niche. The numbers for that were very low, actually. I mean, I think it was under 3% of the headsets that it picked up were quests.
The graph I saw said something like the Rift S, the Oculus Rift CV1, and the Quest were all up there, not super high, but interestingly enough, what was it? The Cosmos was below the DK2.
Yeah, the Cosmos.
So there were more DK2s being actively used than the HTC Vive Cosmos.
Yeah, like, I don't think they've made their case for that.
Even fewer than that were using the Pimax headset.
Right.
Which obviously is because there's so few out there.
Right.
But it was just interesting to see, man, how the mighty have fallen. Because I remember when the Vive was far and above the market leader in terms of those Steam surveys. And so now it's like, wow. And even the original Vive is fairly high up in that list.
It is.
Too.
It is. I mean, it's only been just very recently that the Rift S has nudged it out as the top headset on Steam. And I mean, part of that's because Steam is the native ecosystem for Vive, whereas I'm sure tons of people either mostly or completely stay in the Oculus home environment with Rifts. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting to see validated the fact that although every indication we've ever seen is that the Quest is selling like mad and is radically outselling the Rift S and other headsets, very few people are tethering them, or at least tethering them and using Steam, which makes the case that there was high demand out there for a VR headset that did not require a gaming PC. These, you know, the people that are buying it clearly were buying it because they didn't want to hook it up to a PC, or they didn't have a PC that was capable. So that makes the case that this is the Quest is serving a market segment that was not being served by the desktop VR.
It'd be interesting. Platforms. Does SideQuest publish their install rate or their install numbers?
I don't know. They are very responsive. If you email them, they'll get back to you.
I was
going to
say that would be an interesting number to have in terms of like how many active installs do they have as of, you know, April 1st, 2020. Right. And that would give you a good idea of a portion of the number of quests that are out there.
True.
And B, how many quests are being used for more than just the standard Oculus home environment, because honestly I feel like it's a large number of quests are just being used. I mean, think about the sheer number that probably got given as gifts for Christmas this year, and how many of those went to teens or younger, even or not super tech savvy friends or family, who all they know is fire it up, play the games, and do the things on the headset. They don't even know about the fact that you can get a link cable and hook it up to the, you know, hook it up to your computer and do all these extra things. You know, I think we know a lot of that. And I think a big portion of the quests on Steam users are early adopters who have converted, because we started out on Steam. That was the platform for VR. That was all we had. Or running the apps natively because you got them from the Oculus dev website, where you got to download your demo there. So, I mean, we're used to it. And as much as possible, because I'm a gamer, like, I download stuff through Steam as much as I can.
Sure.
If I can avoid buying directly from the Oculus store in general, I will, so that I can play it on whichever headset I want, no matter where.
Right.
And I know that I have access to it through my Steam account, you know, whenever. So it's just easier that way. But there's some interesting like walled garden stuff happening between all the different ways to access VR content now and the different platforms and the different avenues that you can get to it. I don't think we're ever going to get a really good number or a really good estimation of what we're at until we get hardcore first party numbers.
The installs for, Sideload. Do you know if there's a way for them to actually measure how many installs they've had or just downloads?
I mean, for sure they can get downloads.
Yeah.
Installs, I'd imagine there is, because they've got to connect to some sort of service. So they can just check their server requests from unique IDs.
Yeah, it definitely bounces through a central server that they own. So they can track that.
Get a MAC address count and boom, you've got a pretty good number.
And I'm assuming, given that SideQuest so incredibly simplifies the process of sideloading things, that essentially everyone who's sideloading software, other than stuff they've just written themselves in Unity or Unreal, I'm pretty sure almost everyone is using SideQuest for that at this point.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you can do it on the command line with ADB, but why would you? So.
Yeah.
And then another thing is, when did y'all start hearing about that the Steam poll? Like when was that Steam poll?
3-ish days ago. It was okay. It was beginning of the week.
Yeah,
or it was when I saw it.
Okay, that's because I too. So I actually got a Steam poll through Steam. Like I was asked to contribute
hardware.
Oh, yeah,
And one of the things that I specifically looked at was, it had a little thing on there that said headset detected.
Right.
And for me at that time, I did not have my headset hooked up to my computer.
Right.
And so it said no.
Oh.
Right. Right.
So
yeah.
I'm wondering. Well, this was only maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, it may be tracking both. It may be asking whether it's hooked up right now, and then also because it's apparently was a Steam VR update that enabled them to start taking metrics on.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just keeping a little local database of how many times you've launched apps into a VR headset and what the headset was. So
So before we go, Kevin, I know you've been playing Half-Life Alyx. You want to give us your 5-10 minute review?
Yeah, sure. And so I will say I've been trying to, as I've been talking to the guys, I've been having some problems with my headset, but I think I'm figuring it out. I think it's just a kind of a weird little fluke with my connector. But I think if I hold it just right, it seems to do okay.
It's gonna make it hard to fight off head crabs.
But thankfully it's not too bad, as long as it's just this little problem. I can work through it just fine. But so the first thing that comes to me is just how interactive it is. When you first start out, it just kind of pops you on this little balcony. There's a radio that's on, and you can kind of hear static. You can reach over to it. You can grab onto the antenna and pull the antenna up, and then you can grab the tuning knob and go through stations, and it actually tunes into a couple different frequencies. Basically, any kind of small thing that's around, you can just pick up. If they are slightly bigger objects that would be heavier, you actually have to use two hands.
Oh, wow.
So, if say it's maybe like a heavy box, you can grab onto it with one hand and you can kind of move it around. But as soon as you, say, try to actually pick it up off the ground, it'll just kind of slip out of your hand and go back to the ground. And then so you actually have to have two hands on it in order to pick up these bigger and heavier objects. So I thought that's a pretty cool touch. Also, quite a few nice little details. You'll find like a box of matches. And so you can pick up the box and shake it, and you can hear the matches rattling around inside the box. I am a little surprised that they don't allow you to open the box up, you know, and say take a match and strike it or something like that. You can kind of mock wear little items. There's like gas masks and hard hats kind of around the environment. Yeah, and so you can actually put a hard hat on, and you'll be able to barely see the brim of the hard hat in your
view.
I like
when games do that. That's fun.
You know?
Or like glasses or something.
And then for the mask, you don't really see it, but like if you put it on and you're playing for a good while, and you can reach back up and, you know, grab onto it and toss it back down.
So can you wear like a filter mask while you're playing, so like you're safe in VR and at home?
I guess I like could an actually
since or something.
I do have a chemical filter mask.
There you go. Just get like you a chemical filter bigger mask, and then just slip that on whenever you're in game. Just get your immersion going.
Exactly. You know, that way I get all the nice smells and everything too from inside that thing. There's another little part where there's like a some whiteboard, and of course you can make a pointing finger, and you can actually wipe off the dry erase marker just like with your finger if you wanted to. Otherwise they do have erasers that you can use. So I thought that was kind of a neat little touch there as well. And then just to me the game itself is just very, very well done. It feels like it's very well thought out. All the dialogue in it is pretty good. There's quite a few laughs in there between the interaction of the main character Alyx that you play and Russell.
Yeah.
One of the other guys that's kind of following along with you at the very beginning, he gives you this little headset that you put on, like this little kind of earpiece type thing that has a camera on it, so you can hear and listen and talk to you and see what you're seeing. So it makes a really good system of, you know, actually being able to talk and interact with the player, you know, instead of maybe just kind of like a voice of God type thing going on, or feeling like you're just completely alone.
Well, that's good. I mean, everything I've seen, I mean, like the physics are apparently really awesome. Like you can sort of like shield block some headcrabs and like send them flying through a glass window. And like, apparently they did really good on just sort of the interactivity of the game, which is what you want in a VR game. You don't want to be walking through hallways that are very thematic and very, you know, suspenseful and then not be able to like interact with the world. You know, it feels like a waste if you're going to make your world look really amazing and then not make it so that the player, especially given the freedom of VR, not make it so that the player can interact with the world. It seems like Valve delivered on that.
It does. It seems like they really, you know, put it with the glass that you can write on, with the markers, with the piano that you can actually play. I mean, I've watched the videos of people playing all sorts of things on the piano. Right. It's just they've really stepped up and done what VR should do, which is make you feel like you've got a real world you can interact with. So
right, that was a thing in the Medal of Honor demo that I did at Oculus Connect 6, was they had this whole puzzle with like playing a specific set of notes on the piano to unlock a secret doorway in like Revolutionary France or something like that, or Occupied France, which was pretty awesome. So, you know, having those kinds of things are really awesome in VR games.
Absolutely.
But let's see. The whole blocking head crabs. One of the things that I want to try to do, I just haven't done it yet. I've just been trying to follow the story in the game as much as possible, and maybe I'll try and do more stuff later on, as a second playthrough. But they've got like those big road barrels, like road construction barrels, here and there, and I've been wanting to try and get like a big barrel like that and see if I can trap a head crab, you know, underneath the barrel and see what it does. Like, you know, is it enough to keep it underneath there? Like, is it, you know, is the barrel just going to start moving around the environment, you know, with the head crab, you know, walking around underneath it or what? Yeah. So like that's something I want to do. And the puzzles in there, no, it's just such a nice feeling actually interacting with the objects and everything with their puzzles.
Right.
Because Half-Life is kind of known for their physics puzzles. And, you know, they bring that kind of stuff back. And so you really do feel like you're solving those puzzles, which is pretty cool. Like I said, I think it's a very, very just well thought out, well put together game just in itself. They do have mod support, and one of the mods that they're working on right now is to actually have it so as a desktop version, so people who are, of course, interested in the whole Half-Life series can
still experience
can at least experience it, and that's play cool. Play through that part of the story. But
well, hopefully,
you know,
the mods lead to some more content, like community-based content for everybody to see in VR, so that'd be pretty cool.
One of the things that I've heard is like a horde content that apparently is pretty popular, you know, so that you just get waves of increasingly difficult enemies in like this arena. But also, I see that as, you know, so yeah, they'll be able to play it on desktop, but then eventually, you know, I've played through it, but it'll keep them thinking like, how much better would this actually be in VR? Because no,
and eventually we'll get Half-Life 3.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, if only.
I'll tell you, I've actually been holding off on playing it until we've got an Index at work and the Knuckles controllers to go with it, and that's really how I want to play through it, straight through. So I've been holding off doing it till I can get a hold of those. But
yeah, well, I think we've covered pretty much everything that's been going on lately. Does anybody else have anything they want to chime in on?
You know, one other little thing that I haven't heard if it's, well, I've heard about it, but I just haven't been able to experience it. But for Eric, if you are able to, I've heard that what you can do with the Knuckles controllers, if you have them,
yeah,
while playing Half-Life Alyx, is they have like bottles and cans in the world, and supposedly if you squeeze on the Knuckles controller, you're actually supposed to be able to like crush the bottles and cans, you know. Nice. Again, which is just kind of a nice little touch, but
that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Alrighty, well, I think that's it for us this week. Thanks for listening, everybody, as usual. This was one of our more relaxed episodes. We didn't have a specific topic. So next episode, we will probably be talking collaboration in VR. It's a very apt topic for what's been going on in the world right now. So tune in next time for that one. And until then, we'll see you next time.
Take care.
See you, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Virtually Relevant. If you liked it, please consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite podcast app. It helps bring us up in the charts and makes us easier to find. If you'd like to support Houston VR and this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/HoustonVR. Until next time, thanks for listening.